Yes, Marcus. He's at the junction of Unity Street and Porto, on the west side of the rotunda itself. Best fix I can get on his radio. Ty as well.
Thanks. Phoenix out.
He caught up with Dom.
You don't owe me anything.
Shit. I swear he's a mind reader. I didn't do you much good while you were banged up in the slab all those years.
Funny, I thought you saved my life.
We've got to talk about it, Marcus, sooner or later.
Later.
What's eating you?
And thanks for not asking why I'm bothering to help Hoffman. I don't need to ask, but I want to know what Baird said to wind you up. Don't you get out of breath talking while you run?
No, I'm fit.
Stop ducking the question.
Marcus fell silent for a while. All Dom could hear was the steady chonk, chonk, chonk of their armor and boots as they jogged. In the deserted streets, the sound echoed like a bag of rivets being shaken.
Okay, Marcus said. I hesitated in the past and cost guys' lives. I'm never dicking around like that again.
Marcus didn't have a hesitant bone in his body, and Dom couldn't believe there was something that serious in his past that he didn't know about. He filed it mentally for discussion later. Whatever it was, it had really stung Marcus.
Okay, Dom said.
They were a couple of blocks from the rotunda now. Some stranded had emerged again and loitered on a corner under a dim streetlight. When they saw Dom and Marcus running, they melted back into doorways. For them, it could only mean locusts were about.
Okay, but I want you to know that I busted my ass trying to get you out from day one. I didn't forget.
Don't you think I know that?
I hassled everyone who'd listen to get an appeal together. Ministers, officials, the lot. Shit, I even tried to get some asshole to spring you.
Dom had traded his own Embry Star for that. Even in post-E-Day Jacinto, collectors still wanted them badly. The medal didn't seem to matter when everyone he ever cared about was gone.
Did you get my letters?
One or two.
I wrote every week.
I knew you would.
Shit.
Dom forgot the grubs. All he could think of was Marcus stuck in that shithole with scum that weren't worth pissing on, never getting a word from the outside. It broke his heart.
I'm sorry.
You got me out. Don't sweat it. Marcus slowed to check a landmark. It wasn't always easy to navigate on foot, because the ever-changing cityscape looked a little different from an APC's height.
I knew you'd keep trying.
Dom could feel himself slipping back into an old habit. When Carlos had died, he clung to Maria and the kids, and was scared to be away from them, even for a few hours. It was a year or so before he kicked the panic. When Marcus had been jailed, it was like losing his brother all over again. Now he wasn't prepared to be parted from Marcus for any damn reason at all.
If I'd stayed with Carlos.
Dom had replayed what little he knew of his brother's last hour more than 1,000 times.
He knew. He'd counted.
He also knew that if they'd been together, all three of them, it would never have ended the way it did. Yeah, he understood why Marcus had to save Hoffman and Caliso. He understood completely. Chapter 15.
Guns and bombs don't kill people. Clever scientists who want to build a better method of destruction kill people. Lots of them. Most of my gears couldn't make anything more lethal than a blade or a bow. So you'll forgive me if I think it stinks that my gears get your baby killer crap, and your educated colleagues get research grants. And that's before you start inventing other shit you can't control.
Major Victor Hoffman, during a frank exchange with a student at La Croix University Careers Day, 4 years before E-Day. Aspho Point, 16 years ago, half an hour into the raid. I can now see 2 machine gun positions, 2 hostiles, line of sight with the gates, Benjafield said. 6 more still out there, but I can't see them. Cho, you got anything? 3 more moving to rear of building. Want me to follow? Hoffman cut in on the comms circuit. Negative. Cho, stay with the boat. Morgan, by talk, go to the rear and sort them out. Cho, Benjafield, stand by to bang out of there with the prisoners if it comes to the worst. The bots are programmed to return to you. Data and key personnel retrieval, that's all we're here for.
Dom, crouching by the entrance of the main building, listened on his radio as Benjafield observed from a hide he'd scraped together in the grass fringing the shore. In the green and black world of Dom's NV, Hoffman and a couple of Pisangas were to his right by the door to the accommodations block, and everyone else was a disembodied voice in his earpiece as he tried to keep them mapped on a 3D model in his mind's eye. The first exchange of fire had been short, as if the counter-assault team had suddenly changed their minds about storming the building. Now it was silent again. Maybe the Indies' special forces knew they were outnumbered. But Gears didn't usually give a shit about that, and there was another counter-assault coming in from the north anyway. So why would Indy commandos back off?
The only firing was coming from behind them, from the hinterland, Asphalt Fields. Dom couldn't see the skyline from this position, but he knew it was lit up. He thought of his hot-headed brother.
Carlos, do it by the book. Listen to Marcus.
They have to know we've got civilian hostages, useful ones, Hoffman said, so they won't risk getting them killed. That's our edge.
Timiu was in the communal room at the front of the building, tasked with keeping the ASFO staff quiet. Life would have been a lot easier if they hadn't been around, but they were also now a useful human shield. The clean rules of engagement had crumbled in this grayest of gray areas. It was going to be a choice between letting scared civvies loose in a battlefield before the charges went off and the bombing run started, and not letting them go, which had its own bad outcomes.
They're not bystanders. Remember, armed or not, they're not innocent bystanders. How would they treat us if it was the other way around?
Frankbot is the priority, Hoffman said.
He seemed to be working through their worst scenario plan now.
If we lose the other 2, the meat of the data's on the servers anyway, so Phoenix will have to reconstruct the hammer shit from that. Santiago, look after that goddamn machine like it was your new kid.
Shit. I have a little girl. I forgot. I really did. I forgot her for a while. How could I?
Dom checked the server room. Frankbot was still motionless in front of one of the racks of machines, hovering on a faint haze of bluish vapor, both arms extended and plugged into the ports of 2 servers. It seemed almost rude to interrupt him.
Frank, as soon as you're done, don't wait for us. Go to Benjafield, got it?
Did he expect the machine to say yes? At least he didn't have to worry that the bot would protest about leaving its comrades behind. As Dom slipped back outside, Hoffman waved him to the front of the building.
Santiago, get the civvies into the lobby, he said. When we exfil, take them down onto the shore with us, then let them loose at the last moment.
Sir, do we use them as a shield?
That's not what I planned, but if need be, yes.
Dom darted back into the accommodation block to the communal room where the scientists were trussed on the floor. Timiu had his lancer resting on the windowsill, ready to smash a hole in the glass to fire out. Infrared was no use through glass, so he had to rely on his eyesight to spot a frontal assault, but he still kept looking down at the people on the floor. The question was visible on his face.
What do we do with them now?
The ASFO staff were helpless on the floor, face down. Dom squatted and took out his knife to cut the plastic ties on their ankles, 1 at a time, and as he rolled over the first woman to pull her to her feet, ladies first without even thinking, He saw the terror on her face. She wasn't looking at nice Dom Santiago, doting father and devoted husband. All she could see was a stranger with goggles for eyes and a massive assault rifle, encased in armor that made him look more like a machine than a human. "We're walking you to the other building," Dom said. Her mouth was taped and her wrists still bound, so it was an incongruous courtesy. "In case it all kicks off."
"Hey."
Timmy's whisper was sharp enough to make the woman flinch. He looked up and took a step back, lancer raised, pointing to the ceiling.
"Up there. It's not the storm. I can hear something moving."
Dom was between the door and the woman, just in case she made a run for it. It was for her own safety. He focused on the window that ran the length of the room, facing out to sea, and now glittering with salt crystals from the storm spray. If some bastard was on the roof, they were preparing to spring the prisoners. Dom made the woman get down again.
"Head down, lady," he said,
"because an indie round won't ask for your ID pass."
"Cleaner, we have a contact on the flat roof of the common room," Timmyu said. "Stand by for multiple breaches."
The indies would do what Dom had been trained to do. They'd get in a number of positions around the building and then breach simultaneously. The shit would be flying in all directions. Maybe they'd drilled for hostage extraction. The Royal Tyran commandos hadn't, not yet. It was a bit late. But they could wing it, Dom decided.
"One guy making his way onto the roof via the radio mast," Morgan's voice said.
Radio procedure was slipping as the situation got messier. This was the squad's first real deployment in a commando role, and it was starting to show. Hoffman would make allowances, Dom was sure.
"By tack's gonna give him a steel surprise. Two more coming our way, ground level, via the generator room doors."
Morgan's radio went quiet for a moment. There was a rattle of fire from inside the building. Voices suddenly burst onto the circuit.
"Two right outside!"
"Shit!"
"Roof man, he down now, one down!"
"Shim, you okay? Talk to me, buddy."
"Young?"
Hoffman's voice said.
"Young! Upstairs! Don't let anyone get to the bots!"
"On it, sir!"
There were still three indies unaccounted for. Three was a lot of special forces. Dom listened for indicators from the flat roof above. They know where we're positioned inside. Nobody's that lucky. Or smart. They've got someone observing inside.
"Sir, they're getting intel from inside. They have to be..."
Crash! The window that ran the length of the common room shattered just as Timmyu opened up with his lancer. For a moment, Dom thought he'd smashed a gap to fire out and brought the whole sheet of glass down on himself, but three indies burst through the window firing like they'd swung down from the roof. Dom got a split-second flash of goggles, gas mask, and heavily laden webbing. He put a burst through the first shape that triggered his reflex. A round hit his armor like a punch in the shoulder. One, two indies went down, and the third dived for cover, just as Dom and Timmyu converged fire on him. The screams, muzzle flash, and hammering rounds stopped dead like a switch being thrown. It was a second, just a second, of held breath. Dom emptied his clip into the man nearest him on the floor, just a step from one of the prisoners. Timmyu did the same. They made damn sure they were down and dead. As soon as the firing stopped, the sobbing and crying started again.
"Anyone hurt?"
Dom yelled. He went along the line as fast as he could, shaking each prisoner and checking they hadn't been hit. Timmyu checked from the other end of the row.
"Anyone hit? Stay down, don't move."
"All alive," said Timmyu.
He went to check the indie troops.
"And they are not."
"Green two to cleaner, three hostiles down. We're coming out."
Four left. Two on the guns, two engaged out back. There was still a lot of trouble waiting.
"We're going to die,"
a man kept wailing. We're going to die! Yeah, there was a bizarre irony in that. Dom couldn't find the words for it right then, but they would have been something like, and we'd be going to die if we hadn't got to you first. He backed out of the room with Timiu to follow the sound of fire from the rear of the main building. Hoffman had moved inside to the server room and was trying to check Frankbot's progress. Dom waved Timiu on to back up Morgan and stopped to warn Hoffman. "Sir, I'm damn certain they've got someone in here," he said. "They knew we were here. They knew where we had the hostages. Might be experienced guessing, might not. We still haven't found the second guard." "Does it matter now, Santiago?" Hoffman's impatience with Frankbot was visible. His jaw was clenched. "There'll be a backup assault anyway as soon as the Indies realize the first squad failed." "Has it?" "Yes. We're about to make it fail." Hoffman made for the door. "But let's find that insider and stop him anyway." Asfo Fields. The wind was starting to drop. It had also changed direction to offshore. Carlos could now feel it on his face. He could also hear a lot better. Between bursts of fire and the thump of mortars, he heard a sound from much farther inland, beyond the low ridge that marked the edge of the levels and the start of firm ground that dipped slightly into a basin. The grinding noise of gears carried on the wind. It sounded louder with every second. It was familiar bad news. "They've got armored cav out there!" Carlos yelled. The sound of the Indies' armored fighting vehicles, ASPs, was as easily identifiable for gears as the engine note of a raven, but they didn't produce that same comforting feel in the gut.
"Ma'am, we have cav units approaching from the northwest."
"How frigging inconvenient." Stroud paused. Satellite recons were useless now. Old data against a very fast-moving strike force, and in darkness. They were relying on basic soldiering again.
"I heard them, Santiago. Anyone got a visual? Anyone?"
"Not yet, ma'am." That was Kennan. "They must still be in the depression. We hear them, though."
"Asps are wheeled and heavy," Marcus said. "They won't be able to negotiate this terrain. They've got to stay on the Asfo access road."
"They've normally got AA and missiles mounted, as well as heavy Cal MGs," Carlos said. "They don't need to come this far."
"We're not the primary target," Stroud said. "It's Asfo Point."
"They've got assets inside." Carlos knew as soon as he said it that it was wishful thinking, bargaining with the unseen divine to bring Dom back alive.
"They won't cream their own facility."
"They've got a damn backup," Stroud said. "Unless we take out Ossig Corps, they can flatten Asfo and lose nothing."
"Key personnel?"
"Let's see how long they're prepared to hold off before they decide that's a price worth paying for asset denial." Marcus shifted to a sitting position, heels dug into the spongy ground, long spear balanced on his right shoulder.
"The bridge," he said. "Look at the map, Carlos. They'll have to come across this bridge. It's the only point anything that heavy can cross."
"Are they reinforcing Asfo? Or getting ready to cream it? They could..."
"Off channel! And use your damn call signs!" Stroud barked. "Tactical voice traffic only! Fuck it, people! Can we not maintain radio discipline?"
Carlos moved his mic away from his mouth, chastened. Stroud's wrath made his gut lurch more than the mortars.
"I was never much good at that."
"Yeah, they're waiting for something," Marcus whispered.
"You're right."
Across the maze of channels, mudflats, and reed beds, C Company was now split into two parts as the Austrian mortars churned the ground between them. On the flat terrain, there was no vantage point to observe from, limited cover for movement except for the small scattered islands of woodland, and a steady stream of fire was pinning everyone down.
"We're here to let Dom's squad get clear. That's it. Everything else is secondary,"
The problem was working out how best to do that in a battle that was developing in ways they hadn't expected, because the signals base clearly had more hardware at its disposal than Intel had realized. Or else they'd started moving up armored units as soon as they realized something was amiss. How did they pick this up? Is this just one big ambush? And now there was something else approaching in the distance. Carlos picked up its hotspots in his NV scope. Light AA piece, he said, that could negotiate the terrain. Major Stroud, mobile anti-air, setting up 2 clicks north, pedestal mounted. Stroud's voice was hoarse. They must be psychic. She paused as if she was firing at something. Colonic Control, please advise Merritt that her petrels will encounter surface-to-air missiles. We'll take that out for you. Be advised, we also need Ravens for Kazovac. Mortars thudded again from behind the Austrian line, sounding like someone hitting a case of rivets with a hammer. It was such a small noise, Carlos thought, totally at odds with the ear-numbing explosion when it landed behind him. Wet soil blown high into the air rained on him in cold lumps. The accuracy of the Austria fire was improving, and Carlos could gauge it by the comms traffic, the calls for medics and reports of gears killed or needing Kazovac. If they get that anti-air piece going, we'll lose the Ravens, too. Shit! Marcus aimed the long spear and fired it in top attack mode, lobbing a nasty surprise on a mortar position. The missile arced across the levels and dropped into the grass to end its flight in a ball of flame.
We're burning through these damn things too fast.
Carlos couldn't hear anything from Asfo Point now. C Company's part of the operation had shifted from being a defensive wall for the raid to being a fight for their own survival. Another mortar exploded to Carlos's left.
Long stop to Kennan, Stroud called. Sergeant Kennan! Shit, Kennan's down. Medic!
Asp in visual range.
Marcus hesitated.
Ma'am, second Asp and more light-armored vehicles, extended line from 757001 to 761330. 8 LAVs.
It was a wall of fast-moving firepower coming down on them. A decent airstrike would have done the job just as fast. Carlos found himself thinking more about that bridge.
"They're going to ring Asfo Point," Stroud said. "They're going to lock it down."
Her radio clicked as she changed channels.
"Colonna Control, we have armored units and AA moving toward Asfo Point. Strength around 10 vehicles so far. Where's our air support?"
"Long stop. 2 petrels inbound for Perasfa."
Anya's signal was breaking up. Then it came in strong again.
10 to 15 minutes. Take the base out first. Give the Indies a good reason not to destroy Asfo Point.
Long stop. You believe that's their objective?
Affirmative. Base first, then help us out with the ground forces.
Roger that, Long stop.
Mataki to Long stop,
Bernie cut in. She was still tasked to give fire support to Asfo Point itself.
I'm seeing intermittent line-of-sight signals from the facility to Perasfa. Some bastard's got a signal lamp. Can't read the code, but Hoffman needs to know he has company. Looks like a very small machinery space on the roof, rear of the main building. Doesn't look big enough to take a man, though.
Stroud let out a little satisfied ah.
Long stop to cleaner. You have a hostile on site, signaling manually to Indy forces. Rear of main building, machinery space on roof. Old tech defeats a big defense budget again.
Cleaner to long stop. Thank you for saving us a search.
Helicopters.
It was Calizo. He'd been very quiet.
Not Ravens.
They were still waiting for Kazovac. Carlos couldn't think of a safe landing zone now. It was going to be under fire wherever they managed to touch down.
Medic,
Stroud said.
How's Kennan?
He's dead, ma'am.
Carlos heard the sudden silence. It was like every man and woman on that field had stopped breathing for a moment. Not a breath on the radio, not a single word. Even in the middle of a firefight, the shock paralyzed them for a moment. It was more than losing a comrade. They'd lost a linchpin of the company. Stroud said it for them.
Shit! Shit!
She paused.
Mataki, you're senior NCO now. Regroup with Kennan's platoon. Get across that channel and get wide of their LAVs. Take them out.
Yes, ma'am.
Longstop, this is Kaliso. I hear Indy choppers approaching from the sea. Can't get a bearing yet.
Kennan's gone. He practically weaned us. My Sarge. The shock of losing a man who seemed immortal really dented Carlos for a moment. The reality of knowing any of them could be next snapped him back into the fight, but a little corner of his mind kept repeating it. Kennan's dead. Dan Kennan's dead. Carlos strained to listen to the engine sounds fading in and out on the wind, hoping Kaliso's hyper-acute hearing was wrong for once, and it was Raven's after all. But the guy was right. Marcus adjusted position and reached for another long spear.
"I've got two left," he said. "Even if the other platoon's got a stack, we've got more targets than missiles."
"Marcus, Kennan's gone."
I heard.
"Shit."
"Focus. We've got to hold off that frigging cav out there."
Carlos couldn't believe he wasn't gutted about Kennan. But Marcus simply pulled down the shutters, in the same way that he never cried about his mother. Carlos wasn't sure if he could ever find the words for grief, or if he was just too scared to let it out in case it consumed him. So now he just rolled his head back slightly, as if he was about to shake it, and shut his eyes for a moment. Nothing more. Carlos wondered just what it would take to ever make him weep.
"Okay. We've got to move across that channel and drop in a few grenades," Carlos said.
It wasn't deep enough to be a river, but it was wide and boggy enough to be a major barrier.
"Take out some of the vehicles the hard way. I can start moving up now."
"We wait until Stroud says so."
"Yes, Corporal Phoenix."
That was Marcus, model gear, doing it by the book. Stroud was the best, but even the best couldn't get a picture of this battlefield now. Dark, seen from flat on the ground, glimpsed through tall reeds and grasses. The battle was, as always, nothing like the plan. It never was. Instant decisions had to be taken, and hindsight might one day prove them right or wrong, but the one that was always wrong was sit on your ass and do nothing. Carlos had developed a sudden personal grudge with the two asps. They were still standing off on the maximum range of the long spears, and had separated far enough for him to have to track across with his Lancer scope to follow them. I could be across there and dropping ordnance down the hatch in minutes.
"Phoenix to Longstop," Marcus said. "I can take the asp on the left. It's just in range."
"Hold for a minute, Phoenix."
"Chaka, chaka, chaka."
Carlos could hear it now. Definitely not Ravens. They were Chimera assault helicopters, either coming to churn C Company into mints and save the Cav boys the trouble, or they were heading for Asfo Point. Taking one of those down with a long spear was no easy job.
"Noisy assholes,"
Marcus muttered, still focused on the green landscape on the small CLU screen.
"Come on, Dom. Take the frigging data and run."
The storm had subsided. The storm that had moved in to take its place was wholly man-made. Asfo Point.
"Minor change of plan," Hoffman whispered. "We've got a hostile inside relaying our strength and movements. I'll find him. Bytak, take out the two jokers on the shore."
So the second security guard was somewhere up on the roof, and somehow he knew where the gears were located in the building. There'd now be a backup on its way, if it wasn't already in position, to pick up what the first Indy squad didn't finish.
Sa, ready.
Baitak, Shim, and four of the Pisangas drew their machetes again. The tall clumps of grass on the shore shivered in the wind, and Hoffman could see the two machine gunners spaced 5 meters apart. He could also hear helicopters. Whether they were dropping special forces or missiles, it wasn't good news.
All call signs. How are the bots doing?
10 minutes, sir, said Dom Santiago.
Where are you?
Top floor with the bots.
I'm heading your way.
Hoffman paused for a moment because he suddenly couldn't see the Pisangas anymore. They'd melted into the sedge and grass. Even with NV, he couldn't see them. He certainly couldn't hear them. And neither would the machine gunners. He shouldn't have waited any longer, but he did. The next thing he saw was the gunner on the right rear up a little, as if something unpleasant had crawled under him, and a hand covered his face. He convulsed and thrashed, but then he fell off to one side. By the time Hoffman looked left to the other man, he simply wasn't there. The two guns stood idle. Two heads, two cammed-up Pisang faces, appeared just above the grass and then vanished again, and the machine guns were dragged silently back into the foliage. Every time Hoffman saw Pisangas fight, they left him awestruck. They did nothing the gear way.
Two down, sir.
Nice job, Sergeant, Hoffman said. Stay near the boats. Watch for helos.
Need any help, sir? Said Benjafield's voice in his earpiece. He sounded frustrated. You've got your hands full.
And you've got the boats. You know what to do if this all goes to shit. Take the bots and get out.
Hoffman slid back into the main building and through the double doors, stepping over the non-essential ASFO staff sitting on the lobby floor. They were still bound and taped. He could see their eyes, staring up at the ceiling, as if expecting something to rain down on them, or, tight shut, looking at one another. At least they weren't screaming their heads off.
I should have shot them. But I just can't.
Morgan and the Pisang troop were still trading fire with two Indies at the rear of the building. Dom had joined them, but Hoffman caught his arm and made him follow.
It's diversionary, sir, Morgan said. They're not moving. There'll be a second wave. I know.
Hoffman sprinted up the stairs at a crouch with Dom.
Humor them for a few minutes.
On the top floor, Young was checking Brucebot. Hoffman's attention was on the ceiling and fire doors, looking for a route to the roof. It wasn't shown on the plans that Satil had given them, and there hadn't been anything on the aerial images to indicate a hiding place. He pulled Dom close.
The guard's up there in a plant room or something, signaling. Find a route up.
Young tapped Brucebot's casing.
He's finished, sir.
He. Young found it hard to call Jax it.
Okay, get it out to Benjafield. Jobot? Finishing up. The data seems to be stored mainly on the server. This is just local drive stuff, but we stripped it anyway. You never know what you need.
Hoffman beckoned to Young and signaled, up on the roof, hostile, we'll deal, get going. Young nodded. It was funny how the expendable assets, the bots, originally designed to free up gears from hazardous and time-consuming duties, were now more important than flesh and blood. Dom came back and indicated the swinging action of a door.
Service stairs, he said.
The two men stood flat against the wall.
We have to assume he knows we're coming.
Hoffman listened again for helicopters. He was expecting a roof assault.
I don't know how, but he's tracking movement.
You think he's special forces, sir?
Well, he evaded us so far.
Hoffman had only one plan.
So, basic drill. Door down, open fire.
When they reached the top of the single flight of narrow stairs, an awful, cramped corner to be pinned in if they got this all wrong. The flimsy door in front of them looked like the entrance to a kid's playhouse. It was tiny, more like a cupboard than a room, if the scale was anything to go by, and the height of the ceiling looked all wrong. It was a flimsy door, too. Dom gestured with his lancer. Spray it from here? Hoffman shook his head. That didn't guarantee killing the occupant. A badly wounded man could still return fire or activate a booby trap. The door had a simple lever handle and conventional mortise lock, but Hoffman didn't intend to try it to see if it would open. He indicated the lock, raised one hand, and counted down silently while Dom aimed. On three, Dom blasted the lock to let him burst in. The scene that met his eyes slowed and stretched into slow, fine detail, disjointed, frozen images of shocking clarity, as if his brain was making damn sure he never forgot what he did next and could never shut it out. He fell. He fell hard. Where's the floor? Where's the frigging floor? Hoffman was suddenly flat on the ground, winded, not where he expected to be, trying to right himself. The beam of Don's tactical lamp picked out a man in a security uniform, a guy maybe in his 20s, balanced on a pile of crates to reach an open vent right at the top of the wall, a heavy-duty lamp jammed into the narrow opening, a lamp for checking dark corners, a lamp for signaling. For a fraction of a second, he froze like an animal caught in headlights. He had a pistol in one hand. He managed one more flash of the lamp, and then both Dom and Hoffman opened fire. He was signaling until the very last moment. Hoffman and Dom stopped firing. In the sudden ringing silence, Hoffman realized the tiny room was no more than a blocked-off shaft. Its floor sat well below the level of the doorway. He'd fallen more than a meter. The ceiling was set almost flush with the roof, with only the narrow vent standing proudly out of it. No wonder it was never picked up on the aerial recon. "So there's the bastard," Dom said, catching his breath and staring at the guard's crumpled body. "So there's the hero," said Hoffman, realizing his kneecap hurt like hell from the fall. Training and drill made a gear's body move independently of slow, conscious thought. Muscle memory and adrenaline kept you alive. No time to debate, think, check the manual, dick around, just react. But Hoffman's brain was arguing, yelling at his legs that he couldn't leave this man's body here, and where the hell did he think he was going? In the cog, the young guard would have earned a medal. Now he was just a dead enemy. Hoffman found himself constructing an instant profile. A man young enough to serve in the army, but not serving. A man who could use signals. A man with the presence of mind to calmly find a hidden vantage point while all hell was breaking loose, and send information that would enable the Austrian forces to mount an early counterattack. A former soldier. Dom caught Hoffman's elbow. "Move it, sir. You okay?" Former because he'd been wounded? "Yeah, fine." Hoffman stopped. He had to look. He turned the man over and looked into his face, because it was the least he owed him. When he searched the room for radios and other equipment, the simple, mundane truth became obvious. The guy had been monitoring a simple fire prevention system that registered when doors opened and detected body heat to check if rooms were occupied. It was always the stupid little stuff that caught you out. "He kept his head, used his initiative, and brought down the Austrian army and air force on us." Maybe there's another explanation for who he was. But I know I killed a hero. Dom checked the body for any useful documents and keys, but he was a perceptive lad. He'd have been thinking the same as Hoffman. "Time to bang out, sir." "Yeah. I'll file a report. I'll let the Indies know what that man did."
I have to survive to do that.
Let's activate the debt timers and get out.
The Indies wouldn't get the chance to trash Asfo. Hoffman would do it for them.
Chapter 16. Make it up with your old man, Marcus, because we're all a long time dead. Forgive him. Forgive yourself. When he's gone, you'll be ready to give everything for one more minute with him. Carlos Santiago, still trying to broker peace between the Phoenixes. Asfo Fields, COG front line, 0145 hours. Carlos's radio came to life.
Kelowna Control, petrels inbound from the northeast, heads down people just in case.
He could hear Merritt's two petrels long before he could see them. They thundered toward Asfo and Parasva from the northeast, a beautiful long storm of sound that said everything was going to be all right. The Indies were going to take a pounding.
"Go cream 'em," Carlos said, straining to look over his shoulder. "Go, go!"
"And they said you couldn't cross a fighter with a bomber," Marcus muttered.
"Shit, look at that."
His voice was drowned out by a burst of fire. Without NV goggles, the battlefield was a chaotic, deafeningly noisy landscape of brilliant flaring lights plunging in and out of pitch black. A huge explosion lit up the sky to Carlos's right for a few seconds. He took a deep breath for a bellowing cheer before he realized that it wasn't COG firepower, but a mid-air detonation. Fireballs scattered and fell to the ground. The split-second gasp on all the radios made his scalp tighten and his gut cramp.
"It's hit," someone said. "Shit, they got the petrol!"
"Asps," Marcus said.
"We need to take those bastards out, Phoenix," Stroud said, "or everyone's screwed."
The roar of the other petrol continued, sounding as if it was climbing out of Asp and AA range. There was another whoosh of hot gas, and a missile streaked high into the night sky. A few terrible, unbreathing seconds later, another explosion, and a massive ball of fire filled the sky.
"Shit, what have they got?"
That was Mataki's voice.
"How are they locking on that well?"
"I don't know,"
Stroud said. She was just meters from Carlos and Marcus now.
"Phoenix, take the first asp left. Jarkovs, how many long spears has your section got left?"
"Two, ma'am."
"Make them count, then. Second asp and the AA piece nearest you."
Long spears were one-man launchers, but Carlos braced Marcus's back with his knee as he aimed and fired. The asp was already moving before he pulled the trigger, but Marcus was a good marksman and...
"Fuck," he spat.
The asp was right on the long spear's limit, moving right again, and the missile went wide by half a meter. It took out something in a ball of flame, a tree, or maybe it just hit ground, and Carlos grabbed the last missile to load it for Marcus.
"He's moving out of range."
To the other side, Jakovs wasn't having much luck either. The asps knew the gear's limits. One of the LAVs wasn't so smart, though, and took a long spear up the tailpipe. Carlos could see other armor moving up to the asps. As Marcus fired, an APC cut across the line of fire and caught the incoming missile fully broadside. Carlos saw the plating fly off in all directions. At any other time, the kill would have raised a cheer, but all it represented now was Marcus's last long spear wasted.
"Shit, shit. Sorry, ma'am, sorry."
"Okay, Phoenix, you did fine. One less threat on the field."
"So, no pressure,"
Jakov said cheerfully. The very last long spear streaked away, and Carlos didn't even get time to focus on its jet. But the asp had fallen back, moving into a knot of other vehicles. The missile detonated, and a machine gun position vanished. The difference between turning a battle and defeat could be a matter of centimeters. Marcus kept cursing himself under his breath, one hand blocking his radio's mic, and Carlos felt terrible for him. But he hadn't failed. It just wasn't doable there and then. All he could do was grip Marcus's shoulder hard and try to move him on from feeling the battle was his sole responsibility. And Carlos could hear helicopters. He fell back on his elbow to look up at the sky, but he couldn't see any navigation lights. The Chimeras were waiting, circling a little way offshore.
"Kelowna Control to Longstop," said Anya Stroud's voice. "Merritt is scrambling the rest of its petrels, but it's going to be 10 to 12 minutes. Cleaner is now ready to exfil. Stand by to pull out."
"What about the medevac?" Major Stroud asked. "The Asps are going to drop them before they're anywhere near the LZ. We've got no ground to air left. We're down to RPGs. We're going to have trouble suppressing Asp fire."
Anya sounded as guilt-stricken as Marcus for a moment.
"We're working that one out, ma'am."
Stroud paused for a moment, and her voice changed completely. She was another woman for just a moment.
"You're doing fine, darling. Really fine. I'm proud of you."
It silenced everyone for a few long seconds. Carlos could always hear when everyone on the net was listening hard. All the background noise and breakthrough of local chatter stopped dead. Stroud never broke radio procedure on comms with personal chat, let alone in the middle of a battle. And it made Carlos hold his breath. There was a definite finality to it. He could guess what she was thinking. She wasn't sure she was coming out of this. Anya seemed to hesitate for ages.
"And you, Major," she said.
Carlos couldn't bear it. He cut in one syllable before Marcus.
"Ma'am, let me get closer to the Asps. I can put one out of action if I get close in."
"I'll do it," Marcus said and started to get up.
Stroud grabbed his pants leg at the knee and pulled him down again. She was closer than Carlos had thought.
"I've had more practice at this, Corporal. You and Santiago, go right and lay down some fire. Keep as many of them busy as possible."
She changed channels.
"Alpha, Bravo, and Echo fire teams, regroup on Mataki. Mataki, I want half your troops securing an LZ on the beach, and the other half giving the Indies all they've got from as far from me as possible. We're leaving."
"Ma'am," Mataki said, "if you're thinking of crossing that terrain on your own and doing what I think you're going to do, they'll pick you up right away."
"How well you know me, Sergeant," Stroud said. "You'll just have to keep them very, very busy."
"What are the choppers waiting for?" Marcus asked.
The Chimeras still weren't over land. If they were, they could have shot up C Company pretty fast.
"They're not after us. They're here for something else."
"Well, I can't fart around waiting for them to choose from the menu."
Stroud sounded as if they were just a minor irritation, and loaded more grenades on her webbing.
"That Casavac's going to land whether they like it or not. Keep an eye on the Asp left of us. Give me a few minutes."
She dashed out from the cover of the grasses, and Carlos heard her splash into a channel. She was gone before Marcus could protest.
"She's nuts," Carlos said. "She's got a point."
"If she has, so have I."
Carlos had served alongside women for 2 years. They had to be as physically capable as men, but at that moment it didn't sit right with him to see a woman of his mother's generation having to wade through shit and mud under fire. The fact that she was an officer was irrelevant. All his instincts told him to protect and respect.
"Come on."
Marcus tugged his sleeve and began crawling through the sedge.
"You heard the lady."
"Yes, you did," Stroud's voice said.
She still had her comms linked to the net.
"And I can still damn well hear you."
"And your daughter can hear you, too." Carlos could face any risk to his own ass without thinking over much, but watching, worse, listening, to someone else do the same was unbearable. He didn't expect her to make it. He fully expected to hear her scream and choke as an Indy saw her coming and put some heavy caliber rounds through her. All he could hear on the radio as she moved through the channels was occasional splashes and heavy breathing. It was hard to work out where anyone was in this terrain without popping up above the grass for a look-see and risking a headshot. Marcus ended up alongside Jakovs and his fire team, and Carlos almost fell over them.
"So what about the other asp?" Marcus said.
Jakovs was reloading, feeling around in his pockets for another clip.
"What about the rest of the calf out there?"
"It's the asp that's going to stop the ravens from coming in."
"I'm up for it."
Carlos fought down something rising in his throat. It was an unsettled gut that reminded him he was a man, and hiding in the grass might have been correct procedure for this situation, but it wasn't right.
"I can reach it if Stroud can."
There was a sudden blaze of light and gas farther down the field, a rapid volley of fire from a couple of the LAVs in Mataki's direction. She'd definitely grabbed their attention.
"Long stop to all call signs," Stroud said. "I'm 10 meters from the asp. It's just idling at the moment, and the guy on top cover isn't looking my way."
Carlos sighted up on it. He could see the faint, green-lit shape moving at ground level.
"Ma'am, you're..." "Stand by!"
Carlos heard her breathing. He even heard the sock, sock, sock of boots thudding into wet soil. A man's voice said one word, nothing Carlos could understand, and then he saw Stroud take a leap up onto the hull of the asp and drop something, 1, 2, 3, into the top hatch. The guy on top cover dropped back inside rather than trying to scramble out. She didn't manage to slam the hatch and tried to jump clear, but her webbing snagged. She was hanging off the asp, caught with both boots off the ground. It swung its gun turret. It had seconds to live. And so did Helena Stroud. For a moment she struggled and reached for her knife to cut the straps.
"Shit," she said.
The explosion was bigger than Carlos expected. It blew the asp apart, flames shooting into the night sky. She'd dropped a shitload of ordnance into their laps.
"Ma'am! Ma'am!"
Radio procedure went to rat shit again.
"Longstop, are you okay? Ma'am!"
It was the stupidest thing he'd ever said. He knew it at the moment the words left his mouth, but you always hoped, always knew that gears survived when they shouldn't have. He'd seen men survive penetrating brain injury. He'd seen miracles. But he couldn't see Stroud at all. And the asp was in pieces. When he finally moved the scope much wider of the target, 30 meters, and made sense of what he was looking at, he knew Major Stroud was beyond any help.
"Oh, shit! Shit!"
Carlos still listened for breathing, insane as that was after what he'd just spotted, but he couldn't even hear static on the comms channel. Marcus caught his belt as he tried to straighten up for a better look. Carlos was ready to sprint across that field, Indies or no Indies, and bring back what he could.
"Shit, we can't leave her!"
"Down," Marcus said quietly.
"I know, I know."
He put both hands to his ears this time and spoke quietly on the comm.
"Mataki, it's your show now."
"I heard," she said.
"Santiago, is that confirmed? Is she a T4?
Tango 4. Dead beyond medical assistance. It was a clinical neutral code for the triage of injuries, from the most urgent treatable case, T1, to the low-priority walking wounded at T3. But a T4 needed no medics. And Anya was listening on the net. Carlos fought to get a grip. There was no way he was going to say over the radio that Stroud was in pieces. It was starting to dawn on him that her daughter had heard all of it, and he could imagine nothing worse. He thought of Dom. It was too much.
"Confirmed. She's Tango 4,
he said. But so is the fucking asp. She did it.
Mataki just paused a beat.
Kelowna control, Longstop is down. That's a T-4.
The distance and clarity was necessary. Carlos knew that.
One more asp, Marcus said.
He was talking to Mataki. They were the last NCOs, the last command of any kind left on the field.
That's our biggest problem. It can take the Ravens.
You keep your arse right there, Phoenix, Mataki said. White one.
Carlos could hear the Chimeras still circling. They had to be waiting for Hoffman's party to Exville. They weren't going to trash Asfo Point.
Poor frigging Anya,
Marcus said to himself. He swallowed loudly enough for Carlos to hear. He seemed to be changing in front of Carlos's eyes, one death at a time.
Jakovs, listen to those bastards. I don't think taking out that other asp is going to be enough.
So Anya Stroud had made her mother proud of her. At least that had been said in time. Most folks never got to say the things they should have before it was too late. But it was a shame the old girl couldn't hear her now. Anya's voice shook, like the signal was breaking up, but she did what she had to do, and Carlos could hardly bear to listen.
Kelowna control to Pomeroy, she said. Longstop is down, Tango 4.
There was a slight pause, as if she'd swallowed, but not long enough to count as losing it.
I repeat, Longstop is down, Tango 4.
Asfo Point, 16 years ago, 1 hour 10 minutes after landing. The ground shook as Hoffman herded the Asfo staff across the soggy turf. They were on their own now. And there were Chimeras out there, just tracking up and down, not engaging, not doing anything. Chimeras didn't just hang around sightseeing at night. They were there to pin down the Exville. The boats wouldn't get 200 meters before they strafed them. So the last thing Hoffman needed was civilians adding to his problems.
"Get going," he yelled. "Go on, run, run! Just get the hell away from this place before it blows!"
He had to shove the men hard in the back. Timiu pushed one of the women.
"You're safer out there, run!"
The scientists, still in night clothes, were too scared to run into open ground where they had no cover. Where Gears saw a chance to escape being pinned in a corner, unable to see the enemy, the civvies saw only noise, explosions, and imminent death.
Ironic. So frigging ironic. This is what weapons do, folks. This is what your work creates.
One woman just wouldn't move. She was about 30. Rooted to the spot in a striped sports top and shorts, and she was simply too paralyzed by fear to leave the illusion of safety that the doomed building gave her. Morgan and Young came racing out of the entrance.
8 minutes, sir.
Young grabbed the woman's arm and dragged her bodily across the compound. She screamed, but he just kept going, even when she lost her footing.
Timer's ticking down. You're gonna end up dead, honey. Get the hell out! Move!
Hoffman ran for the boats. They'd have to be lucky beyond belief to get past the Chimeras. A heavy sea might have been helpful, making them a harder target to fix on, but the storm had picked the worst time to ease.
Prioritize. Prioritize. We've got our own scientists, so the data comes first.
Cleaner to Pomeroy. What's the maximum range of a bot with 60% charge?
There was a pause, longer than Hoffman thought reasonable with live deaths ticking down behind him.
3 kilometers to be safe, Michelson said. Why?
Ravens can get a fix on them, yes? You can pick up control and direct them?
Yes, if you give the pilot a search area so he can get in range of their receivers.
Then I'm sending them out on their own to a hover point 2 clicks offshore. Grid reference 590068. Get a Raven in to retrieve them.
Cleaner, just because Stroud didn't...
I'm listening to a pack of Chimeras prowling out there, Quentin. Attack helicopters and semi-inflatable craft do not play well together. Just humor me. Give the damn